Ornish Alumna in County Limerick is one of the biggest alumina refineries in Europe. It is also owned by Rusal, the Russian aluminium giant founded by sanctioned oligarch Oleg Deripaska. Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, questions have been raised repeatedly about whether alumina linked to the plant is feeding supply chains connected to Moscow's war effort. But 4 years into the war, Ornish remains open, Russian-owned, and outside any sanctions. So what exactly is going on there? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. An Ornish alumna sits on the Shannon Estuary in County Limerick. It's a major industrial employer in the region with nearly 500 core jobs, and it plays an important role in the global aluminium supply chain. But its ownership is what's under real scrutiny here. Since 2007, the refinery has been owned by Rusal. It's an aluminium company founded by Oleg Deripaska. He's one of Russia's best known oligarchs. And Deripaska has been sanctioned by the US, the EU, the UK and Canada. He's seen as a really close contact to Vladimir Putin. Yet, this aluminium refinery, his company, remains in operation despite these sanctions. In 2022, it was reported that Irish officials had drawn up a confidential plan to put Ornish under state control if needed. That never happened. The government's position has been that intervention is legally and economically complicated and that hundreds of jobs in Limerick must be protected. But others argue that if Ireland is serious about sanctions and Russian influence and its support for Ukraine, then Ornish cannot simply be treated as another normal private business. Well, Jason Corcoran has written about this in the Irish Examiner, and he's reported from Russia for 14 years for Bloomberg News, Dow Jones, The Wall Street Journal, The Sunday Times and many more. And he's the author of a brilliant book called Leaving Russia, How Putin Forced a Country's Future to Flee. And Jason, I'm delighted to say, joins me here in the News Talk Daily studios. It's really lovely to meet you and to speak to you.
Finally, good to meet you, Ciara.
Let's, as we always do in a podcast like this, we want to go back to the basics here, right? So we get a real understanding of what Ornish is, what its connections are and what's been alleged against it. So from, I suppose, the top, it is this massive alumina refinery. What exactly does it do?
Yeah, this refinery was acquired by Mr. Deripaska in 2007 from Glencore, which is a massive commodities holding and trader. And it, in fact, it imports bauxite, which is the raw material used. And that bauxite is used to make aluminium, which ends up in the smelters of aluminium across the world. And the problem we have with this, and there's been investigations lately by very, very respectable organizations, including the Irish Times and the OCCRP, which is a very respected investigative journalism unit based in Europe. And they claim that this raw material, the actual aluminium, is making its way into smelters that are producing Shahi drones, which were initially imported by Russia at great expense. And these Shahi drones are now being made relatively cheap at the cost of about 20,000 to 30,000 euros. And they're making 4,000 of these drones a day. And last year, Kyiv, for instance, there was only 5 or 6 days when Ukraine's cities, Kharkiv, Odessa, Kyiv, were not bombarded by these very drones. So to me, it's actually inconceivable that some of this raw material that's been made at Ornish is not ending up in smelters that are producing these drones and other armaments.
Now, look, the Department of Enterprise, when they've been asked about this, they said, look, they are going to look into this. Mm-hmm. They are going to carry out an investigation into what is happening to that alumna. Mm-hmm.
Do they have the resources? I mean, the OCCRP, who have people on the ground in Russia and they have sources. Do our own Department of Enterprise have the people who are going to travel to the special economic zone in Tatarstan and visit these drone factories? Are they going to go to the smelters in Krasnoyarsk to find the materials and to analyse them properly?
Okay, but we're going to get the results of that in a fortnight.
Yes.
Okay, and we'll then have a clearer view on what the government's view is, I suppose, and what the Department of Enterprise view is on those particular allegations.
Yeah, and our top diplomat in Europe, Kaya Kallas, just said we need to hold fire until we hear the results of that investigation.
Okay, and I'm going to get back to that allegation and the response of Ocknish in a moment, but I just want to go back, I suppose, to the company, right, which was purchased by Roussel, which was headed up by Oleg Deripaska back in 2007. Roussel is an aluminium giant, isn't it?
Yeah, it is massive. It is one of the top five commodity companies in Russia. So Oleg Deripaska, in terms of oligarchs, he is premiership leader. He's top four. In terms of his wealth on the Forbes list, he had, you know, various points, 30 to 40 billion US in wealth on the Forbes list. And he has been a key enabler of the Russian regime for a long time. For instance, during Trump's first administration, Oleg Deripaska was tasked with meeting Paul Manafort. Probably some of your listeners will remember, Paul Manafort was the campaign manager for Donald Trump. So Deripaska met with him and they were passing messages between Donald Trump's administration and Putin. And also, if you go back further in history, he has always been tasked with helping out with national projects, which were seen as vital towards national interests.
And he's one of these people who would have come to prominence during all of that really turbulent privatization after the fall of the Soviet Union and became, as you say, this prominent oligarch and a multi-billionaire.
Yeah. So there was a wild scramble of assets after, you know, communism collapsed in 1991. And there was a switch from, you know, the command economy to market economy overnight. So there was just a scramble for assets. And the most egregious scramble that, you know, most people agree, commentators and historians, was in the aluminium sector, where, you know, there was car bombs, there were assassinations. We're not saying that, you know, Oleg Deripaska ordered any of this, but this was the sector that he operated in. And he came out as the leader and consolidated these assets into Roussel. And then he got very cozy with Vladimir Putin. Like, their relationship has not always been good. After the global crisis in 2008, he had one factory, Roussel factory, that was going to close down. And it created a bit of a storm in the media when there actually was a bit of a free media. And Putin went to the factory and he had an argument, a public argument with Deripaska, which was very, very unusual, and threw a pencil at him. But they since made up. And, you know, Deripaska was part of the few oligarchs that helped build the infrastructure for the 2012 Sochi Winter Olympics. So he is very much on Team Putin. And he has been, as you said, sanctioned personally. Aluminium has not been sanctioned by the EU, but he has been personally sanctioned by the UK, the US, Canada, France. I mean, you know, all of the big Western powers.
And why is he individually being sanctioned, and have some of his companies been sanctioned as well?
Yeah, so he's been sanctioned for his close ties to the administration, to the Kremlin, and the fact that he has been an enabler, and that's been proven by independent reporting. And he doesn't deny that he had these meetings, you know, with individuals from the Trump administration, and even prior to Trump winning his first term in office in the White House. So he has been this kind of person. And
he has challenged some of these sanctions in court, but most of them remain.
Yes, most of the oligarchs have. The only oligarchs who've actually managed to successfully challenge some of the sanctions have been, you know, sanctions on behalf of their wives. So Usmanov, this very big oligarch, he had some sanctions against his wife and his sister, but most, all of the other sanctions against the individuals themselves who run these conglomerates. State-owned entities like Gazprom, Rosneft, Deripaska, Roussel, and Potanin at Norilsk Nickel.
And just to go back to what these sanctions look like, what do they mean for somebody like him?
So it means for people like Deripaska, Usmanov, Roman Abramovich, is their assets in the West are frozen. So Roman Abramovich, for instance, he sold his stake in Chelsea, the football club, in West London. And those, the proceeds of that were meant to actually go towards Ukraine, and they've still been stuck in an escrow account. So the assets are frozen, money flows are frozen, bank accounts are frozen, and there's effective travel bans on these individuals from traveling to the West. So it makes their life very difficult, even if they have golden passports. And many of them have been collecting passports and visas, it's in my book, like Boy Scouts collect badges.
To allow them, I suppose, to circumvent?
Yeah, circumvent, and to be able to move freely around the world on their PJs, private jets.
Oh, that's what you call them. Never heard that before. Okay, my PJs are my pajamas, but there you go. Maybe someday I'll have a different type of PJ. So to go back to Akhenish, this is a major Russian-owned asset sitting inside the European Union.
Yes.
Okay, to go back, I suppose, to what's been alleged, okay, in that reporting that you talked about that was carried out by the OCCRP, and this is this not-for-profit international investigative organisation, the Organised Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, and it says that it's specialising in exposing organised crime, corruption, sanctions, evasion, abuses of power. Yep. How strong is the evidence?
I think it is very strong. There is, you know, you talk about, you know, as a journalist going and finding a money trail. So this is like finding a material trail. And there has been one individual who's done a lot of work, Caelan Roberts, who's secured. He's a blogger and he's on YouTube. He's caused a sensational social media. He's managed to secure some of this material powder and is going to get it independently investigated. As far as I know, Kira, it might not be conclusive because
it's really hard to get conclusive proof, yes, I would imagine.
Yes, because all of this aluminium raw material is coming to Russia and it's been sent to smelters and it's coming from four corners of the world. So it's not that it's one piece, a once powdered piece of aluminium is making its way into a Shahed drone or into a Kalashnikov. It's been used with other material from other parts of the world. So I don't know whether that evidence will be conclusive, but it's a smoking gun.
And how much of this is being sent to Russia? How much of the produce coming from Akhenish is actually going there?
Yeah, so we've had conflicting reports, depending on who you believe, from the CSO, the Central Statistics Office, and which particular day. So initially, I think it was 89 to 90% of the aluminium was being sent to Russia. And then they revised it to about 50%. And initially, the Irish government was claiming, Kira, that a lot of this raw material was going to Europe. Now the data seems to suggest it's as little as 0.6%, which is minuscule.
And that's really interesting because that actually does fly in the face of what Micheál Martin was saying about this recently, Jason, that to sanction this factory would be self-defeating.
Yeah,
but we'll chat that in a second.
More than it's going to hurt them. This is the thing he keeps repeating.
Look, in response to this, it has to be pointed out that Akhenish has been asked about this. They were asked for a statement in response to these investigations. They say they operate in strict compliance with all applicable European Union laws, including sanctions, export control measures and trade regulations. And they also said, to quote them, they have a robust sanctions compliance and due diligence framework covering its supply chain. Where else is this material likely to be ending up if it's not going into the war economy? What else is its purpose?
Well, you know, aluminium cans, it could be used, you know, for consumer goods, for cars, for aeroplanes. But bearing in mind, Russia is trying to make their own aeroplanes because Boeing and Airbus no longer, because of sanctions, supply them with planes. So they've been cannibalizing existing Boeing planes and Airbuses, which they seized from Ireland because all of the 500 planes, which I wrote about at the time, which were meant to be returned to Ireland to the leasing companies based in Ireland, they were seized and put on a national register by the Kremlin, but they're struggling to repair them. So it's kind of like they're cannibalizing existing planes and then trying to make their own planes, but not having a lot of success. So right across different industry, you need aluminium.
Okay. To go back to the plant, right? You say, look, there was an issue and questions being raised right back at the beginning of the war, back in 2022, imagine 4 years ago. Now, there were contingency plans drawn up to nationalise Akhenish. Why were they drawn up and what did those plans look like? And why did the government not follow through, in your opinion?
Yeah, so there was plans that were drawn up and they've been reported, confidential plans, which were leaked subsequently to the press, about putting it into temporary administration and allowing production of the aluminium to continue in Akhenish and to preserve the jobs, the 500 and so direct jobs, and to protect it against sanctions and possible future sanctions. So those plans were not followed up. And also something that I should have alluded to before, in terms of Lord Barker, he was putting together also some foreign Western investors to try and acquire European assets of Rusal, including Akhenish. And it seems to me that was just a contingency plan by Rusal as well to park the assets and make sure they weren't sanctioned. So there was various different things going on in the background, which are only coming to the light now. So that Rusal was trying and the Irish government was trying to make sure the plant wasn't sanctioned so the jobs would be saved.
And look, there is a big issue with jobs down there, isn't it? It is a major employer in the region. And we have just seen another big employer in the region, Wyeth, go to the wall and over 500 jobs lost there. So if the state did intervene, could it protect those jobs, keep all those jobs and allow that refinery to keep operating if the vast, vast majority of its product is actually going to Russia?
Yeah, but I think you have to, you'll have to source bauxite from different places and you'd have to find new markets. Mm. And this is where you would bring in, you know, government has partners, multinationals in the States and across the world that they work with, you know, all the time. And the previous owner is Gunvor, and maybe you could sell it cheaply to Gunvor, first nationalize it, bring Gunvor in. I mean, there is precedence for this. You know, we've seen Germany 1 year into the war, and this is a far more complex and more controversial case, Kira. Gazprom Germania, which is a unit of Gazprom's gas export monopoly. And in Germany, they had 20% of the natural gas storage and they controlled 15% of the pipelines in Germany. So this was critical energy security. And Germany decided, no, we are going to take over this. We're going to nationalize this. So it's since been rebranded the German name. And now Germany is in the process of selling this company, vital energy company, to foreign investors, albeit non-Russian.
Okay, but just, I suppose, to be clear to News Talk Daily listeners, you say, should the government just go in and take this over? It's not that clear-cut. No. It's not that straightforward. It rarely is in these situations. As you say, they would have to find new markets and new sources.
Yes. I mean, we have a poor record as well. I mean, we've done it in the past. You go back to the 2008 global credit crisis. We took over banks. And the past, we've taken over transport infrastructure. You know, there's a moral issue here because, like last week, there was 21 Ukrainian civilians who were killed, you know, in strikes by Russian drones. And given that the Russian domestic drone output has gone through the roof, then if there's even a chance that raw materials from the Ornish plant in Limerick is making its way into drone making in Tatarstan in Russia, then, you know, it is, I think it's shameful.
I mean, the EU did publish a new list of sanctions this week. Alumna was not on it. Did that surprise you?
It surprised me. I was disappointed more than surprised. There will be further sanctions packages. But there's breaking news today that Kaya Kallas may be frozen out as, you know, Europe's top diplomat. And maybe it was the last straw for some of the countries, some of the leading EU members like France and Germany. Some elements of the parties have been against her, think she's not been very effective. And the fact that she did not put pressure on Ireland to include aluminium in the latest sanctions package, you know, maybe it could lead to her ouster.
I just want to go to what the government have been saying about this, right? The Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, he was asked about it only last month, actually. And he said sanctioning these exports would be self-defeating because it would damage European industry more than Russia. He said this refinery is incredibly important to European aluminium production and manufacturing supply chains. And the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Helen McEntee, also said the plant also plays a significant role in civilian EU supply chains. This has to be considered when you are discussing putting additional sanctions.
But the CSO data indicates that just 0.7% of the aluminium is making its way into Europe and safe. So, I mean, either the CSO is making up this data or they've got it wrong, but it just doesn't stack up to me. And actually, Micheál Martin came out and said nationalising it would be too simplistic, which doesn't make sense to me.
All right. That's really interesting, I have to say. I mean, you do, I presume, have sympathy for the people in the region, the people who work there, the people who really rely on this industry to pay their bills, to pay their mortgages, to keep their families going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a beautiful part of the world. But Kira, we are, by most measures, one of the richest countries by GDP in Europe. Surely we can absorb 500 jobs and take care of these people and find them employment somewhere else, considering we have allegedly full employment.
What do you think is going to happen here?
I think the Irish government will hope it just goes away. So we have all this virtue signalling. We've brought in 130,000 Ukrainians. And some have gone back now. And they're in Kyiv. And we have, my wife has relatives in Odessa. And they wake up in the middle of the night and they go down to their cellars and their bomb shelters because they can hear the buzzing of the Shahi drone. And it's called the Garan. And they go, there it goes again. And they're kind of immune to it sometimes because it's so constant. Every day, every night, these Shahi drones are buzzing over them. And, you know, and it's sickening to think if they believe that some of those drones were made by raw materials that were produced from a facility, a smelter in Limerick.
Are there other European factories in other cities and other countries that are producing materials where there's been questions asked over what the use of those materials is once they arrive in Russia? Mm. And are they also coming under pressure to sanction these companies?
Yeah, no, in advance of this programme, I was aware of one plant in West Finland, and it's owned by a Russian group called Norilsk Nickel, and it's controlled by a guy called Vladimir Potanin, who's the richest guy in Russia. And I reached out to a friend of mine, he's an economist, an Irish guy who works in Helsinki, just to get a little bit of colour on this place. So it makes nickel, but the byproduct from the nickel factory is copper and tin, and that makes its way to Russia. And again, there's the question of whether what's it been used for. Some of it is probably valid for consumer goods, but now there is mounting pressure on Finland to nationalise this same factory, which is owned by Potanin, and they're facing some of the same moral questions that we're facing in Ireland.
Jason, thanks so much for joining us on News Talk Daily. It's an interesting one. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Do get in touch, newstalkdaily@newstalk.com, or just send me a message on Instagram at @officialkiraD. Until Monday morning, have a lovely weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.